Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup, oh, blocked by James! It's over! Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton, some rhythm.
And he got it, young ball continues to wear him out!
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Cleveland Cavaliers are 4-2. They somehow beat the Atlanta Hawks in an ugly, ugly game. But you know what? Wins are wins. And with me today to talk about it is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
Going well. The Cavaliers are 4-2. I don't think that these are the four wins we might have guessed. But you know hell, what? It's been pretty fun.
That's part of it, you know. I said it when the Cavs were 3-0, you're going to lose some games that you expect to win, and you're going to win some games you expect to lose, and this certainly goes into that latter category. And I can't remember the last time the Cavs won an ugly game with defense. Like, that was just such a weird game. And some of it, yes, the Hawks were on a back-to-back. That certainly factored into it. They got lucky that they missed some open shots. But this team was really competing on the defensive end, and I'm so impressed. Like, they just hung around long enough for Colin to close it out at the end. And man, was I having fun by the end of that game.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy that, that we're getting to kind of see this team all of a sudden forge this weird random defensive identity that literally no one on planet Earth saw coming. And I still am. I don't know. How do you feel in terms of, you know, Like, do you buy this? I almost can't tell still. It's so jarring that they're playing this well defensively. As of today, they're allowing 101.8 points per 100 possessions. Good for third in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure some of it's noise, you know, Charlotte, New York, you know, even Indy. Actually, you know, Indy has a good offense, so I don't want to say that. But I mean, the Hawks have the second best offensive rating in the league. They had the number one before this game knocked them out of it.
Before we locked their ass down, Carter.
Yeah. So it is really a jarring transition. And I guess I just kind of want to start asking you why.
Yeah, so I think that's an interesting question. I do think some of it's
well-framed question.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. I do think some of it's noise. If you look at the advanced box scores of last year, they had multiple games where the defensive rating was below 90. They haven't had any of those yet this year. But what I feel is different this year compared to last year is they just seem to understand where they're supposed to be. Like, even Darius Garland and Colin Sexton are playing defense at a more advanced level, which was something that we were kind of hoping for and would anticipate with age. But to see it actually materialize is big. I think Dante Exum has had a big impact as well. He did a great job on Trae Young not fouling. And, you know, Andre Drummond makes a big difference. We talked about it with Dave Dufour, but having a legit rim deterrent is a big deal. JaVale McGee does the same thing. What their defensive strengths are, I think, helps out where the Cavs are at more than Tristan Thompson being a good defender in space. I think what Tristan brings, I think he's a more impactful player, and I would love to have him here. But with kind of the weaknesses that the Cavs have on the perimeter, having that last line of defense guy, someone that can really deter at the rim, it makes a big difference. Because yes, the Hawks missed some open threes, but where they really missed was at the rim with JaVale, Larry Nance, and Andre deterring those shots.
Yeah, so I think it's a couple things. I think one, as we've shouted out in the past, I think Andre is a much better stylistic fit defensively for this team than Tristan was for the personnel. I think in certain situations, you would much rather have Tristan defensively. But not necessarily for a team with a small backcourt that has a proclivity for getting wiped off screens. Playing a conservative drop coverage is a lot more healthy for that kind of personnel.
Yep.
Second thing, Larry Nance is playing a ton of minutes and a ton of minutes that Kevin Love normally plays. And while we have, you know, constantly talked, we've constantly kind of had that argument with the larger NBA Twitter sphere that Kevin Love is actually not such a terrible defender as kind of his reputation precedes him. He is certainly not an elite defender by any means, and his effort level over the last couple of years has certainly waned a little bit on that end.
Yeah.
As the stakes have dropped, and you're replacing him with the deflection king, Larry Nance, who is constantly in passing lanes. And here's the other thing that is very meaningful. Larry Nance is playing the four full time.
Yeah.
He is not he doesn't have to be a backline rim protector. He gets to be a chaos agent in the middle of the defense, as opposed to the very back of it that's just there to try to clean up messes. Mm-hmm. So that is huge. And then finally, my final piece to this puzzle here, JaVale McGee. They have two centers that are big, that can play the same style, that can be deterrents at the rim. And while JaVale is by no means an elite IQ defensively, he does make offenses have to work a little bit harder just as a result of his size and just being in the way, you know? Mm-hmm. So yes, when you put JaVale in space, he's going to struggle. We all know that. But compared to kind of a slow-footed Ante Zizic or an undersized Larry Nance playing the five last year, there's just so many reasons why it gets better. And that it happens before we even mention the improved play out of the guards.
Right, right. And I do think, you know, having Okoro those first two games, like the fact that he's already legitimately a better defender than Jetty is a big deal. And then having Exum fill in for Jetty in all but one game, you're kind of eliminating another one of those weaknesses where I think Jetty is suited to play defense against second units. But when you play against starters, it just was not good. And I think the other part of this stew that we haven't acknowledged yet is JB Bickerstaff. Like, I just think this team is more prepared and they understand what their roles are. Last season, there were so many times where they didn't understand whether or not they should be switching. Should they be fighting over screens? Should they be going into drop coverage? And now they seem to know, okay, guards, you're fighting over those screens. Try to get over every single time. We're playing drop coverage with the bigs. Like, it just, they know what they're supposed to do. So even if it's not ideal, there isn't the total breakdowns that we saw, at least not at the same volume. So this is kind of what I was hoping for, and part of why I said I don't think they're going to be the worst defense in the league this year. I think there are teams that are going to be worse. I still kind of anticipate them being, like, let's say 25th or whatever. But in a shortened season, when you have six games and you're at third in the league in defensive rating, that's pretty good. Like,
yeah, here's the thing, Justin, and I'll actually take the tack of being way more optimistic than you. I actually think this is, assuming that they can get healthy and assuming that there isn't an enormous, you know, losing streak that kind of saps their collective will, which, by the way, happens to bad teams all the time.
Yeah.
Assuming that things hold, I actually think what they've produced so far has been fairly sustainable. You know, mm-hmm. This is the nice thing about regular season defense and drop coverage is it's easy, it's safe, it's consistent. And the things that burn you with this kind of coverage that the Cavs have been playing are burning the Cavaliers.
Yeah.
when you play drop coverage with guards that are not elite at getting over screens, you know what happens? You give up pull-up threes. You know, the mm-hmm. Cavs are giving up a butt ton of pull-up threes, and they go in, and they've been going in at a pretty okay rate. So I think that ultimately, assuming that the effort level stays where it is, I actually think while top three is obviously, you know, it's unreasonable, and they're going to play better offenses that aren't playing their third game in four nights and all that fun couching stuff. But I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be at least top 20 if they're going to play this style in this kind of a regular season.
Well, look at it this way. If they do get to that, like, let's say they end up 20th or 22nd. I think the Hawks game is interesting because the Hawks are kind of what you want the Cavs to be next year, right? Like, they got one more high pick. They didn't have Okongwu playing, but I think you and I are both really high on him and what they can bring to the table.
Yeah, Bruno Fernando, I think, lost them that game.
Holy crap.
He got blocked
by Darius Garland. that's a tough look for your boy. But I mean, they added another high pick, and then they spent in free agency because they had the cap space to kind of round out that roster. And while I don't necessarily love all the moves they did in free agency, that's kind of what we're expecting from the Cavs next year, right? Like that you get that one more pick that you're adding into the mix. You're rounding out the roster, bringing in role players you think can accentuate the skill set of your young core, and making an honest push for the playoffs. And I think the Hawks are going to get there this year. I think the Cavs have a good shot of getting there next season. And that this is kind of the learning curve year. But I think your point about what Bickerstaff is doing with the defense is a smart one, because get the fundamentals down, commit to one scheme, get the guys to learn it and execute it to the best of their abilities. And once they got that down pat, you can add other wrinkles. You can change up your defensive scheme and maybe you get to the point where you can throw different looks at teams. What we were doing last year and what we've done in the past, where you're not really committing to any one scheme, I think that's difficult for young players to get a grasp of. And it just leads to so much confusion. And when teams get confused and they get frustrated, as you said, when you lose a bunch of those games, guys start kind of going back to bad habits and kind of not committing the full amount of energy that you're seeing right now from the Cavs.
Yeah, and in fairness, like, the Cavs still aren't there yet. Like,
no.
Like, you'll definitely see, like, there are a lot of places where the Hawks had those guys running. They didn't know what direction to go. They didn't know who the next rotation up was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to keep happening, especially against a pretty high IQ offensive team like Atlanta, who, by the way, I think we're just wrong about in terms of their offense. I kind of had this theory that Trey Ball was going to kind of be overly dominant. And no, that's just a team of smart ball movers. Like, even guys like Herter look way, way better. Like, the way he was attacking was really impressive. But, like, teams like that are going to put them in the spin cycle and make them look bad. I do kind of want to flip it to the other side, though. The Cavs are 24th in offense right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of curious what you think about that outcome, because I think that's almost, well, not almost as surprising. It's really surprising that they're third overall. But that's very surprising. We thought this team was going to be carried by their offense, and the offense, frankly, has dragged them at times.
Yeah, but I do think that that's a product of how many guys they're missing. Like, when you're really looking at it, the guys that are out right now bring you offensive firepower. Like, Dylan Windler gives you space, and Kevin Love is probably your second best player.
And your best offensive player, probably, I don't know, Sexton.
I was about to correct myself, because I think Collin's there now. I think he's just flat out.
We're going to get to Sexton in a minute. Okay. Because, holy shit. Okay.
But
you know what Love does? Love is probably one of your better half court offensive players. Can we couch with that at least?
Absolutely.
And that's a guy who gets you buckets in a more meaningful way.
Not only that, he makes it easier for other guys to contribute offensively. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going to make the little more spacing for Darius Garland to get to the rim and create for other guys. He's going to let Sexton be a slasher. Like, he's someone you can run offense through. So that's a big deal. Look at last season. Kevin Porter Jr. was a big part of kind of running that second unit. He's not in the mix. I think even Isaac Okoro is somebody that kind of fills in the blanks and gets you those garbage buckets. He's active off ball. Like, when you're missing really a third of your roster and 40% of your starting lineup, that's going to cause some issues on the offensive end. And the fact that they've been able to make up for that with defensive intensity is something that surprised the hell out of me. But even looking at last year, it's not like the Cavs were a good offensive team. So I don't really find it surprising when you look at the full context of the situation. But it is encouraging that even when they are struggling, overall, they're still getting some good performances. Like, Sexton has been pretty goddamn consistent this season.
Yeah, I think when I look at what the Cavs offense is right now, in a lot of ways, the biggest thing I see is it's hard for them to jack up threes in large volume right now with their current roster limitations. Really, the only guy you want that is really comfortable and can get his jumper off quickly is Garland. Like, Sexton's, the percentages are good, but I just don't know if he's ever going to be like a 7-8 attempt a game 3-point shooter.
I think that percentage is a product of his shot selection, right? Like, I don't think that he's someone that can pull the same way. I will disagree with you on one point. There is someone else that has the confidence to get those three pointers up, and that's Jetty. whether or not he's hitting, he's going to take them at this point.
Well, that's the thing with him is, you know, like you actually kind of need him to in a weird way. Like, yeah, you don't want him taking the one off the curl that he took when he started feeling himself a little bit late in the Atlanta game, but you actually need someone to take those shots because they just keep the defense a little unpacked, a little loose, a little disorganized, and the Cavs don't have a lot of that. That's Kevin Love's biggest impact on this team. So I do anticipate that getting a little bit better. I think the offense is going to improve. And frankly, I just think the Cavs are like a little bit cold right now. Garland's had a couple cold shooting games. Nance's jumper has kind of abandoned him the last couple games. Like you can almost feel him working at it. In process.
He's thinking as he's shooting for sure. And that's one of the things he said when he was on the podcast with us, which is, I mean, the secret of being a better shooter is to just not think when you get to the point where you're just comfortable firing away. And he's a little bit in his own head. You can certainly tell that.
Yeah, there's just a lot of thinking going on when the Cavs load up from three. And so I think that's kind of the number one thing for them. Like, you could maybe point to getting to the line, which is just, I don't know if that's going to be a strength of this team outside of Andre Drummond. And, you know, I think if anyone was kind of the villain of last game, it was probably Andre, who put together a pretty poor effort, frankly. Like he got 12 and 11, but zero assists, zero free throw attempts kind of tells you, while Capella, you know, went for 16 and 16 and eight offensive boards, you know, he kind of got his lunch taken from him. Mm-hmm. Like Andre is really the only one who's going to reliably draw fouls. And part of that's as a byproduct of his poor free throw shooting. But the threes, I think, should correct a little bit, even if Love is not back and playing a lot of minutes. Like even a guy like Dodson hasn't been hitting from three very much lately. And that's a guy who seems pretty comfortable pulling even off the dribble. So I think the offense is going to get better. I think the defense is going to get worse. If I had to, you know, just gun to your head, I said, what is their offensive rating finish ranked? And what is their defensive rating rank at the end of the season? What would you say?
I'd probably say 18 and 24. I think that would be a good spot. Like you're going to have games where the offense and defense is clicking at a higher level than those numbers. But I just think kind of inconsistency, guys being in and out of the lineup, young guys that are prone to kind of having wild swings in their production. That feels right to me.
Yeah, I think I'm a little more optimistic than you on the defense. I'm not super optimistic. I'm not crazy optimistic on the offense just because they are still going to, like, as long as Drummond's on the team, he's going to be eating post-ups, and they're going to keep, you know, kind of pushing for this kind of ball control style, I think, at some points in how they run their offense. At least out of the post, they're going to feed their post-up men for, I think, all season, really. And part of facilitating with those guys means you also have to kind of let them make these decisions. And guys like Andre, they're going to shoot, you know, like that's just the, like every now and again, he's going to want to face up and attack somebody. So I'd kind of go, but I go more optimistic on the defense. I think something like 21, 22 on offense and 19th, 18th on defense. I think they've shown enough for me defensively that I can say there is cause to believe that this team can be solid defensively. And and 19th is still not good, you know. Like I think that at some, I'm getting to the point, because of it's an abbreviated season, I'm maybe extrapolating a little bit too much, but I don't think I'm taking terrible lessons away where I say, yes, maybe they've gotten a little lucky on opponent threes. And you know what they've definitely got lucky is opposing free throws. Like Pacers bricked a ton to keep the game close for a while. The Hawks went 10 of 19 from the line. So like there is a bit of luck happening here that I think will have some regression, but I just think the pieces make sense. And I think the part that's really going to stick around is the forcing turnovers. How long have we said that, like, man, I just, like, how fun would it be if the Cavs defense actually, like, was able to get out and run and force miscues? Like, that was not the Cavs forte really. Even in the first LeBron era, even in the Mike Brown Cavs, who were a very conservative style, this team is all deflections, all arms, getting in passing lanes, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and especially for a team that's kind of been criticized for being undersized. Like, their length and activity is disrupting guys, and some of that is Larry Nance and Andre Drummond, who are very active in the front court, but Okoro's been active, Sexton's been active, Garland's been active. Like, Garland and Sexton in particular.
He's also been active, by the way, is McGee.
Yeah, well,
he pokes a lot. He causes a lot of chaos.
Would you say he's emergency pod worthy?
Nope.
You bastard. Well, so the tough part of this, obviously, is that the Cavs don't have a full squad right now. So it is kind of tough to figure out exactly what this team is going to be. They are looking to get more pieces back. And you know who else is looking for more pieces to join their team, Carter?
I have an idea, but I'd love you to tell me.
It's our parent company, Blue Wire. So I want to talk to you guys a little bit about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everybody the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, question and answers with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is you can get this all for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup.
And we can confirm that. That's how much we used to pay.
Yeah.
For when we were independent. So that is actually very correct.
Yeah. Hosting costs, they sneak up on you, man. So whether you're looking to start from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for this episode to find out more, but that's bwhustle.com/join. Carter, while we're on the subject of development, holy shit, Colin Sexton might be legit.
Yeah, feels like he's really taking the leap here. I mean, I think the passing has been better than it's ever been. He's making a lot of really, really good reads. Well, I don't know about great reads. It's not like he's like, whoa, but it's like he's seeing passes that he didn't see the first 2 years of his career.
Mm-hmm.
And the scoring is just really, really good. Like do you feel like his touch has gotten just worlds better attacking the rim? I mean, he had some nice little finger roll floating finishes over length in that game against the Hawks that I'm just like, man, he was kind of a straight line and that was it kind of player. And he still kind of is that. Like he's not Garland, who is just like using his ball handle to get guys off balance and create space where there wasn't. Like, I still don't think that's him, but he is now able to use his speed to effectively generate angles that give him a clear look at the rim in a way he could not early in his career.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think the one thing that really stands out to me is this all feels sustainable. Like, it doesn't feel like he's taking a bunch of tough shots and those are just going in. Like, part of it is his growth as a player, improved touch, the things you mentioned. The other part is the Cavs are finding ways to kind of utilize him off ball. Like, he's grown as an off ball player. And as a result, JB Bickerstaff and the coaching staff are able to go out there and actually get him easier looks. Like, he had a dominant game against the Hawks and it didn't feel like he was dominating the ball, right? Like, he had 27 points, but it didn't feel like the ball was in Colin's hands the whole time. And this really does feel like, because it does feel sustainable, the shot profile is good. Obviously the percentage is going to come down. I don't think he's going to shoot 55-55 from the floor for the whole season, but I mean, you look at his last 42 games here since the Jordan Clarkson trade, and he's at 50% from the floor. He's at 45% from three. Like, he's been really efficient for a long period of time. And I think part of what makes this Cavs team fun and why we are seeing people buying in and starting to come around on what they've developed here is it's not like last time where, okay, you lucked out that the Clippers pick got you Kyrie. Tristan didn't really blossom until LeBron came here. The difference this time around is everything feels developed. It feels earned. Like, Colin Sexton worked his ass off to get to this point. We saw Darius Garland struggle last year. And yes, even though the shot isn't totally consistent right now and he's had a couple tougher games, you can see the obvious growth with him. Like, they just seem to have a better, more healthy environment. And when you see these guys really grow and develop in the Cavs system, that's what makes you want to invest in these guys. That's what makes it so easy to root for them. And even if there's a few more lessons than wins. You enjoy that lesson because you're starting to see that those lessons are paying off and they're actually resulting in growth with these players.
Yeah, frankly, here's the thing with the young backcourt. It almost, you can take all the development, all the other stuff. You can almost take it to this most simple point is, I feel like they are what keeps them in games. And when the Cavs lose contact in games, it's because the rest of the team wasn't able to get there with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And absolutely, that was certainly not the way I felt about Colin. Even last year during his late surge, it still felt a little, you know, I don't want to say empty stats, but it felt almost in a vacuum from the rest of the action. It's like, okay, Colin's heating up and that's fine. Whereas now I feel like if Sexton and Garland are cooking, the Cavs are probably in the game.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I mean, this was part of why I advocated for trading for Drummond before the Cavs did it, was I thought that he got them to a baseline where those guys, when they play well, it can actually result in wins. It opens up what their games can bring in. Even if Andre isn't a long-term part of this team, you kind of see what the impact of a center like that can bring to the table. It's instructive when you're trying to figure out team building. So the Colin thing, though, like, it's really exciting because we've talked about how this team needs a cornerstone guy. And I mean, part of the talk has been whether that comes in the draft, if it comes in free agency, which is kind of unlikely in this market. But the way he's playing right now, like, if he's a 24, 26 point per game guy and he's scoring at 60 plus efficiency, like, that makes my Mitchell or Murray comps, like, it's right there. Like, he is having a hell of a season. And that's the kind of guy that you figure out a way to make lineups with him work because he's just that talented.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's the big thing with him is he is moving from that kind of player who you kind of say, okay, well, he can get buckets here, but I think if you put him in a real team, it wouldn't look quite so good. Which I think even last year I probably would have said about him. I'm now like, yeah, any team could use a Colin Sexton.
Yeah.
Like he could start for just about any team in the league and provide a lot of scoring punch. Yes, the defense is just not there yet. Yeah, the vision. I don't think the feel on either end is ever going to be uber elite.
Yeah.
But you know what? Most players aren't uber elite.
No, I mean, in terms of their Mitchell, feel for the game. Mitchell and Murray, like the comps we've made, they certainly aren't in that category. And like you look at it now, potential assists, Sexton's up to like 9. Like that is solid growth.
Perfectly respectable numbers.
Right. And if he gets a assist percentage up to 20%, like all of a sudden he is in that combo guard range that you see guys like Murray, Mitchell, McCollum, like that's the level of playmaking you would expect from a secondary playmaker. So I certainly think, especially as this team gets more offensive talent in, him and Garland are going to get more assists. Like things are going to click. They're going to get more comfortable with each other. Cause I think that's the other part that we haven't really looked at is, yeah, this team still had those 9 months off. They still had a rush training camp, abbreviated preseason, guys in and out of the lineup. Like that is going to hurt your individual numbers and it's going to hurt your team numbers offensively. So I'm just blown away. Like, especially he had only one preseason game. He struggled in that preseason game.
Yeah. Remember how dumb we were? We were like, he often starts slow, guys. I wouldn't expect much.
Right. Right. And I think it's worth noting that last season he had a strong 5 games to start. And then he had that 26 game streak where he shot 22% from 3, right? Like he struggled during that stretch. So he is someone that has kind of gone through those hot and cold stretches. But I think the biggest difference last season was he wasn't getting those same looks. He wasn't as strong as he is now. And like, they're throwing good defenders on him. Like, I think,
yeah, I mean, he had DeAndre Hunter on him the whole game.
Right.
Who is huge, by the way.
And I think that's where we were wrong on Atlanta, by the way. I think it's on the defensive end because, like, Cam Reddish didn't have a good game offensively. He hasn't had a great start to the season, but that guy is long as hell. He's a good defender. They threw him on Garland. They threw Hunter on Sexton. Like, that is just, that's a shit ton of length to throw on guys, and they're very disruptive. And then you have Clint Capella waiting at the rim. And Sexton still had a great game. He wasn't forcing things and still managed to get those 27 points.
Part of me wonders if Gallo is going to limit their development a little bit. Like doesn't that team, did you ever watch that team last night, even when they were playing really well, and go, or even when things were falling off and go, they need Danilo Gallinari.
Yeah.
Like, I almost feel like I'd rather just have Hunter out there.
That was my criticism, that I would rather bring in one of Bogey or Gallinari, not both, because I really like the guys they've drafted. I think they've done a really good job there. And I mean, people are always going to bring up the Luka thing, but at some point you have to just kind of move on from that and acknowledge who they did bring into the mix. So I really like what Atlanta's done. I think Okongwu is going to be perfect for them. Like, I think that's just such a nice fit, and he's going to unlock them both offensively and defensively to another level. But when you look at the Cavs struggles, yeah, we're shorthanded. They had great defenders thrown on Garland and Sexton. Sexton still rose to the occasion. He was still that closer. Garland at least kept shooting. I think that was his first bad game. Like Indiana, he kind of played his way into a better game at the end. Yeah. But that was the first game where he didn't take a slow start and build upon it, which, I mean, it happens. I'm happy as hell. It doesn't seem like that shoulder injury was serious. That was really, really scary.
It's going to be so sad.
Could you imagine how bleak this podcast would be if he went down? Oh my God.
Oh my God. It would be dark. Like, that would be the first one where I go, I can't, I'm getting bummed. By the way, congratulations to the Cleveland Browns, who just made their first playoff berth since 2002, just now. So while Justin and I are obviously a Cavaliers podcast, we got a lot of friends that love the Browns, and obviously we're really happy for that fan base, because I think when Cleveland fans are happy, everyone wins. So congrats to the Browns. That's really fun.
Yeah, I mean, it does mean that fewer people are likely going to listen to the podcast tomorrow. But, you know, people
absolutely
go back,
not.
People
They're
go back
be...
and listen to the podcast. And I root for the happiness of our listeners. That's what this podcast is all about here. It's all love here. So I'm happy to see the Browns make it into the playoffs. So shout out to the Browns. Really, really happy to see that. So the other thing that I kind of wanted to talk about. Jesus Christ. And I lost my spot. How about that?
That's fine. I walked away from the computer for a minute.
Yeah, see, you threw me off. What's that?
Well, I was hoping you could just fill, because my cat was scratching on the door, as he always does, so I just locked him in the other bedroom.
You know what? Let's keep this in, because it's been a moment since we've had that. Like, we almost never have to remove parts of the podcast.
No,
I was expecting you to come in with the next topic here, and then you started walking away. So what I did there was, I was like, the thing I really want to talk about, and then I go to my note sheet and I couldn't really find anything. So that's why that
was fine. I'll pick up the ball where you've dribbled it out of bounds.
All right. Thank you.
The team's starting to finally get a little bit healthy. I think we expect to see Isaac Okoro back in the lineup Monday. Against the Magic? They play the Magic on Monday? That seems right.
They play the Magic twice. It's one of those weird road back-to-back kind of. No, it's a road
and
road.
No, it's just a straight road and road. Okay. So that's going to be very, very nice to have him back. Like, I do think that there is a degree of, like, I'm starting to feel a little bad for Jetty, because I feel like he's becoming kind of the whipping boy for them. It's like, well, they need someone to play those minutes. And yeah, he's going to be up and down. But that's kind of the value of getting Okoro back, and eventually Wendler, who I think should be back in the next week or two, right?
Yeah. It's I think he's going to potentially come back after this road trip, which would be great to have him back in the mix. I'm really not counting on KPJ right now. Like, in my mind, it's just like I'm not even really factoring him in, which it's such a weird position to be in when that he was probably the most promising Cavs prospect, and then this year all of a sudden Colin Sexton takes another leap, or it looks like he's taking another leap. I'm certainly buying it. Darius Garland takes a leap. Isaac Okoro, like, I think Okoro looking so much better than expected. Like, Dave Dufour coming on the podcast and saying he's the highest ceiling prospect the Cavs have, which I'm not really there yet. I'm not there yet, but I like what I've seen out of him. It does make it easier to kind of wait and see with KPJ and seeing where that goes. But I agree with you. I think getting Okoro back in the mix is going to put Jetty back into kind of that healthy spot. I'll be interested to see with Dante Exum going back to the reserves, if Garland is still going to be that first sub after 4 minutes. I think some of that has been a product of KPJ or Exum starting. So you want to play Exum with Sexton a lot of those minutes when Garland isn't on the floor. So I think that's kind of been part of the rotations, but I'm interested to see what the domino effects are of getting Okoro back.
Yeah, I think ultimately what it is it's a safety valve where if Jetty is not playing well, you can put Okoro back in. If Okoro is not playing well and Jetty's jumper is working, you can give Jetty a little bit more minutes, or you can throw Exum in at the three. There's, JB has had no flexibility the last 2-3 games, where it's been like, okay, either our guys are going to play well that we have available and will compete and maybe win, or if they don't play well, I have no one to go to.
I do like, there's been a few moments where I've seen some outcry on the timeline about what is JB doing. I'm like,
who the hell is he supposed to put in?
Yeah. are we really crying for more Dean Wade minutes?
We need to have a dialogue. Why is Thon Maker getting minutes over Dean Wade? Anyway.
I think that was just a length thing with Atlanta, just because John Collins is so long next to Capella. But in general, I do think I'd rather see Wade out there just from a spacing standpoint.
Yeah. I don't know. It's been tough. You know, I think there are certain moments where you have to still pitch guys. I could not believe Jetty was on the floor after he took the Euro foul in transition against Trae Young with the Hawks and the bonus. Me and you were so heated about that. I don't get it. It's a tough play. It's a tough choice. But like, now JB's going to have these options. You know, that is the thing with eighth and ninth men, which we have been pretty steadfast in saying Jetty's an eighth or ninth man. Like, yes, we'd love him to take a leap and show more than, you know, we think he should. And, but you know what? Like, you don't always have that luxury. But when he is a ninth man, ninth men are not supposed to be good every single game. Eighth men are not supposed to be good every game. They're supposed to be able to be pretty inconsistent because they're only playing 15 minutes a game. And that is not what the place Jetty has been kind of put. I mean, and when they want to keep him on the bench, that means they have to start all three of their point guards or all three of their small guards to just keep him from being overexposed, which leads to other residual effects. So I don't know. I think that's what's going to be nice about Okoro. And then, you know, getting a guy like Wendler back is going to be really, really helpful for their spacing. So I think these guys are going to continue to play. I think they're going to hang in the kind of the original nine-man rotation that we looked at of, you know, the core starting five once everyone's back with Nance and Wendler and Jetty coming off the bench along with Exum. Like, that nine-man rotation makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and then McGee's there too, right?
Like, oh, yeah, and sorry. Yeah, it kind of goes to 10, actually. I'm 10. Sorry. How about that? I think that it's just going to, like, that's what JB needs. On a team like this, you need options when your young guys aren't playing well. And Dotson's been fine, but he's not a three by any means. No. So getting these kind of bigger bodies back, I think, is going to be really, really, really helpful.
Yeah, I think Dotson's more of kind of an Exum replacement because you do have to kind of factor in the injury history with him. And there's times when you kind of maybe need that scoring punch a little more than what Exum's bringing to the table. So I think with reserves, what you typically hope for is that they bring one thing consistently to the table. And then there's a swing thing. Like for Jetty, it's the shooting. Like if he's on, you're going to give him a little more minutes. If he's off, you want to have that luxury of taking him out of the mix. So I'm certainly looking forward to the Cavs getting more guys back. I'm also looking forward to the fact we're back to two podcasts a week, Carter. It's beautiful. We're now back to the Sunday, Tuesday recording schedule. So we will be, I guess, recording after that Magic game and kind of between the two Magic games. And hopefully Isaac Okoro comes back. Hopefully Darius Garland has a bounce back game and Sexton continues his good play. So I'm excited right now. Like, this is, I've been pitching it for 2 years now, and this seems to actually be the year where we might not be good yet, but we're fun and we're exciting. And
overperforming. That's what you want to see. And it feels like they are definitely overperforming right now.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Absolutely. And there's nothing better than when the Cavs are playing well. So thank you to all of our listeners for listening once again and supporting this podcast. We really do appreciate you. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of our Chase Down Discord, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com, and we will respond with an invite link there. So again, big shout out to all our listeners. Thanks to Carter. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there, and until next time, go Cavs.
Yeah.